request to see if we can have reallocation of the case rebates for those facilities who, for those operators who were receiving commissions and had over-the-counter sales opportunities to be directed to them instead of to the agency. So historically, we've always received the case rebates to be forwarded back to the program for, you know, administrative use or program use, I should say. You know, obviously, it's part of the general fund in which we use to operate on day to day, whether it's, you know, fixing equipment, purchasing equipment, you know, health insurance premium. So we were using those funds last year. Certainly, everybody was in a financial hardship to some degree, and some may remain. We were able to reallocate those case rebates for the previous year's commission. So that's what that is. And this year, you know, I think it was requested that we, you know, re-review the request of the reallocation. So we're bringing it back to the committee to see if you would want that those funds to be redirected to those operators that would qualify for those funds.
Okay. Well, that being said, Tyrell, could we vote on something? Like you said, the program itself gets the funds for anything else that we may need, like the POS systems, any repairs, anything like that. So does it have to be an all or nothing, or can we do a split with the allocations of the funds?
Well, you don't. So the allocations of the funds, so the case rebates are total, right? And I don't have a breakout, but I'm just going to give you a total. So I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I think we received, I know what we have, give me a second. We received $49,286 for case rebates, right? You divide that by two, that ultimately reflects the amount of cases in total that were sold under the Pepsi's, you know, regime of statewide vending provider. So we have that. In that 40,000, that doesn't make up every operator's facility, right? So the operators itself who qualify, who have vending machines or had over-the-counter sales at their location, make up a small percentage of that. So we're essentially saying, I'm just throwing out random numbers, you know, in total, maybe 6,000 out of that 49,000 or 42,000 could potentially go to the operator should you guys choose to vote on that. So it's not really so much an all or nothing. It's more or less you know, the operators whom we've identified would be, you know, qualified to receive these funds would be able to receive these funds. And, you know, obviously the remaining they would certainly stay with the agency, respectively,
because
they work in the operation in which you occupy. So,
all right. Thank you so much for some clarity.
So with that, if I can get a committee member to motion, I guess, for or against, but I'm recommending that we motion to reallocate the case rebate funds to those operators that are eligible.
I shall make the motion that we allocate the rebate funds to the actual operator.
All right. Can I get a second?
I second it, Dave Pelagi.
Pelagi, okay. So we have a motion made and seconded to reallocate the case rebate funds to the operators. Those in favor, say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any operator, any committee members that are against, please say no. Any abstentions? Then the motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, this is Brian. Can I just make sure that the recording correctly captures that I believe that this was a motion for this year's rebate? Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. So let's go back to the statewide vending contract provider update. I will pass it to Tracy. But before I pass it to Tracy, I just want to make one point. I'll let Tracy speak, but I just kind of want to let everyone know Tracy has been less than remarkable in keeping up with the daily services needs as a liaison between Pepsi and the agency. You know, this is obviously my first time being part of the weekly calls and kind of just really working it within the scope of Tracy's responsibility over all these years in the vending contract. And I can tell you that, you know, I know a lot of operators have their gripes, their issues with their vending machines at times and so forth. But let me tell you, you know, take your situation and times that by 100 is Tracy's typical day some days. And so just hats off to Tracy in regards to how she handles it, because it is not a short task. You know, certainly there's been hiccups and we've identified that, and you know, we work through it, you know, on a week to week basis in Tracy's situation day to day. But man, I mean, just to keep that level head of being able to weather those storms and create the change and complete the task and satisfy buildings, it's nothing short of remarkable. But that was just my little chime in. I just had to acknowledge it because it is a task. So let me not hold you, Tracy. You can go ahead and update.
Well, thank you, Ted. Hello, everyone. It's so nice to hear all your familiar voices today. And nice to be with you. Today, I wanted to give you a brief update on the vending world. As of July, we've entered into our second year of a five-year contract with Pepsi. We've been able to place all machines now, despite all the challenges that COVID has brought to all of us and presented. To date, we have approximately 2,100 machines placed between Pepsi and our three subcontractors, Servo Nation, River Vending, Fairfield County Vending, in all of our federal, state, and municipal locations, including all schools and community colleges. COVID has presented so many challenges globally, as many of us see in our day-to-day lives. And full service vending has not been spared of many of those hardships. From a global shortage of plastic, resin, and glass, to labor shortages in all capacities, to repair and install teams, to the lack of CDL and truck drivers, which in effect affects logistics and transport issues country and statewide, to name a few. Despite the unprecedented times we are all living through, Pepsi is truly committed to Betsy, and we remain a priority. They continue to shift resources within states and product lines to meet the demands of our locations as best as possible. They flex and shift labor internally and use smaller delivery trucks that don't require CDL licensed drivers. It's extremely frustrating for a stellar company not to be able to execute how they would like to the best of their ability and to serve their customers how they are accustomed to. However, we are diligent and committed to our program. And Tyrell and I have weekly meetings with Pepsi senior management. We are overall doing well. We are really fortunate to be partnered with a resource. What has been going on? And it really has been very challenging, but like Tyrell said, on a daily basis. Thank you for your time.
All right, perfect. Thank you, Tracy. So we are definitely working hard. We understand the hiccups, and we are trying to identify any operators, you know, situation in which they are, you know, unfortunately not satisfied, which justifiably so. But there just is. There's a shortage, and I don't want to double back, but there's a shortage globally just on all business fronts, and we have to be patient in understanding that. So we will get out of this, I'm sure. So we just staying positive. Moving right along on the agenda. flows right into it. RSA guidance regarding vending machines on federal property. Okay, so back in June, the agency received notification through RSA technical circular, it was 21-02. And it was in regards to the use of third-party vendors in federal locations where there is no blind vendor assigned. You know, the latest guidance that we received states vending machines placed on federal property should be assigned to a blind vendor and as a business opportunity. This certainly came to a surprise to me because my 15-year career, we've always retained those commissions. So as you imagine, I was definitely surprised. Because, you know, obviously retaining these funds, again, supports the financial expenditures required to keep the program afloat. You know, service repairs, insurance premiums, equipment. So here's a couple pieces that we got out of the tech. You know, initially when we received this information, I was of the mindset that I was going to present something that would potentially be something that we can vote on, that the committee can vote on as, okay, how do we look to proceed? However, there were a couple key points in regards to this information that then kind of changed my thought process. In addition to having RSA take part at the NFB mini blast conference at the end of the month to answer any additional questions, in which I believe a lot of states may have, because as we all know, we operate under the statewide vending contract. So that's the first piece. But, you know, within this guidance, the guidance does not mean that we have to abandon our existing federal vending location. All right? So what it means is we simply have to come up with a plan as to how to execute the transition of vending opportunity to an operator in a manner that protects the value now and in the future of our statewide vending contract, in which we should strongly keep at the forefront, as it's the most valuable, important piece to our program's existence. Again, let me rephrase that, because I need everyone on this call to understand, without a lucrative contract opportunity for a statewide vending contract provider to bid on, we have no program. We operate under a statewide vending contract. So our position in the state of Connecticut must always be to have something lucrative to bid on, because the minute we lose that value, the program's over. It's over because of the way Connecticut operates. And I think that's important because, you know, again, being on national calls and hearing other states, and this state does that and this state does that, that's respectful and we understand. However, we have state statutes that we also have to follow in line with. So it's very important that we keep that in mind, that at the end of the day, we must have a budget to support the administration of operation of the program. And no, I'm not saying pay my salary, I'm just saying keep the program afloat. So that's number one. Number two, RSA has not imposed dates as to when this transition should occur. However, I believe working with everybody within the committee in determining a sound plan of action, we can certainly transition this business opportunity appropriately. At this time, we currently have, I believe, 105 vending machines throughout the state on federal properties. Just kind of looking at the average commission amount, it's roughly about $5,000 a month. So I am of the mindset that it's probably going to be in a commission amount of $60,000 annually in value. Okay. Keep in mind, this is not going to be an easy task in transitioning. We have to notify, I believe, federal locations in regards to this latest guidance. In addition, we're going to have to assess the individual average of commission income of each location to be able to make the determination as to if the committee should feel that, you know, this opportunity warrants a split and not just go to one operator. So let's say $60,000, we're just using round numbers, and we say, you know, that should be an opportunity for two operators. Well, we got to figure out how to kind of make it even enough to make it look like a 30-30, you know. So, again, there's going to have to be a lot of reviewing, a lot of historical backtracking to kind of assess the value of each location to come up with that balanced number. information, or I should say one additional piece, and again, the reason why I want to hold off from any votes today, is that the NFB has asked RSA to join the virtual mini blast conference scheduled this month. I sent all of you an email in regards to that mini blast. It is free. I do encourage everyone to join that conference just for their own sake, but in particular, I think the committee should join as well, because they've asked RSA to join that call to speak in particular, and or I should say in regards to this circular, because again, a lot of states have questions, and you know, I think before we make any type of voter decision, we want to be sure that we have all of the information possible to make a sound decision, and not be premature to what RSA is willing to further discuss at this annual meeting scheduled on September 28th. So I just wanted to, you know, obviously present this information to the committee, let them know that, yes, it appears there will be some future opportunity on federal property, but at this time, I think it's premature to make a determination as to who, what, when, where, and how we achieve that transition to provide that opportunity. So, you know, Chairman, I don't know if you have any additional questions in regards, or anyone on the committee.
I do not. If any committee members have a question.
Okay, so I just want to let you know, we will move this item to our November agenda. This way, you know, assuming that we gather additional information outside of what we already know from this month's meeting to further discuss and kind of, you know, strategize a plan of action that we can all feel comfortable with in, you know, offering this opportunity and transitioning this to a business opportunity to the operator or operators. Okay. So, moving along, NFBEI renewal federal fiscal year. The National Federation Blind Employment, as we all know, continues to be a great advocate for the Randolph Shepherd program. You know, I can tell you personally, Terry Smith has been a great leader just in this past year on many topics. In guiding our program in Pacific Connecticut, you know, in just a short time of me taking over as a supervisor. I am certainly a fan of their service and assistance, therefore I am in favor with resuming our membership and ask that the committee weigh in and make a motion on the renewal of membership.
I will agree. It's to our benefit. It has been in the past already, and I think we should continue with this membership. And just so people know, Tyrell, do we have what it costs us?
I don't know. You know what, it changes. I think it changed the last 2 years. I don't recall what the last payment was, unfortunately, and I don't have the latest bill.
That's fine. I was going to throw it out there. It's well worth every penny.
Yeah.
And I think we should continue with it, especially in these tough times where we may have to lean on them in the years to come with their expertise. So it's definitely in our best interest. So if a committee member would like to make a motion to renew our membership, I would entertain one.
I make a motion we renew the membership to NFB, Dave Pelagi.
All right, can I get a second?
I second. It's Adam Fairbanks.
Okay, Adam, you're not on the committee. If any committee member would like to second. Okay, so we have a motion made by Dave Pelagi to renew our membership. Carmela Pereira on the second. All those committee members in favor of renewing, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say no. Any abstentions? Then the motion carries. Thank you.
Moving along, Schedule C's retirement contributions and insurance. I hate to tell you, but at this time, many operators are behind in one of three, or if not all three, areas, and that certainly is concerning. You know, I understand we are certainly in tough times as a program. However, I think, you know, when we're talking about insurance premiums, actually all three topics are extremely important in business, but good faith payments should be attempted, should be made, I should say, in regards to insurance. I will be sending letters to those operators who are unfortunately really behind in their premium payments to kind of, unfortunately, I don't want to say apply pressure, but, you know, really identify how far behind you are in your responsibility. The one thing in my 15 or 16 years in the program is, one thing I know for sure is operators who leave this program in debt always end up paying back in some manner. Unfortunately, to this day, I'm still receiving, I'll receive periodically offset payments from prior debt of operators that have been forwarded to collections. That is the process with it, with our program. We do forward to collections, and that unfortunately stays with you forever. And so, you know, it's not something we like to do, but again, it's a responsibility. So I ask that everyone, you know, please adjust your finances to consider, A, I would say insurance to be a priority and responsibility. I certainly understand retirement contributions, you know, may be a struggle, but you have to keep in mind that retirement does sometimes assess penalties for late submissions. That's not something we implement. It's more or less in the retirement area. I don't believe it's happened, but they make it very clear that they don't want operators, you know, just years of submittals being submitted in, or, you know, catch up during the period in which you're looking to retire suddenly, because they do assess that. But so I just want to make that aware. And Schedule C's, you know, if you forgot to forward me your Schedule C or forward to your Phil rep, I should say, your Schedule C, please do so, because that's all important. Again, it keeps you in good status as an operator for those that are on the promotion to transfer list as well.
Okay. Tyrell, if I may interject here on this note here, you know, these retirement and insurance, you know, it's not a right, it's a benefit to being in this program. You know, the program pays money out for us. If you look at what insurance costs you per year, per month. I'm sorry, yes, per year, it's what a lot of people pay per month in the outside world. So what our program pays for us, operators, annually is a substantial amount of money. So we really need to do our due diligence as operators to give back to the program that's giving to us. It's also in our regulations. This isn't a recommendation. This is a requirement that you pay your retirement contribution, you pay your insurance, and that you get your Schedule C's in on time. There is a penalty that can be paid if the comptroller's office wants to penalize you for not getting your retirement contribution or your Schedule C. They can certainly do that. So those penalties will add up, and you're just doing yourself a disservice, and you're doing your fellow operators a disservice not to make your payments. Again, these are benefits of being in the program. It's not a right. You don't just get the, you know, get these things without paying your fair share. So keep that in mind as we move forward. I know it's tough times, but in order to keep the program rolling the way it's supposed to, you know, the regulations are there for a reason. They're to follow, and you could risk penalties moving forward. So that's all.
Thank you, Chairman. Well said. Okay, moving along to financial relief restoration payment update. I think many of you are tuned in onto this topic. So, here we are. All operator information has been received and formulated based on the committee's recommendations in determining operators' uncompensated losses and RSA's approval to the formula in which the committee presented. So, therefore, a determination of 58.59% has been the determined percentage reimbursement amount to those operators who have been identified to have losses greater than unemployment assistance, in which we had to factor. Obviously, the first $10,000 was waived. So with that being said, I'm basically saying we are able to proceed with paying out these funds. So in the next upcoming days, operators will begin to receive either by mail or by your signed seal rep an attestation form with a financial breakout of your payment for those operators who have been identified to receive funds. Okay, so that basically, you know, the attestation is basically you confirming the information that you provided to the agency, your business report, your unemployment 1099, to be true and accurate to the best of your ability. Once you sign that and review the breakout, which identifies the method in which we're able to congregate the number of which you are due, we will then resume, we will start making those payments. For those operators who have been determined to have received in excess of their financial losses, again, when factoring the unemployment benefits, you will also receive a breakout and a letter acknowledging such findings. Again, the purpose of these funds, and I can't stress it enough, is to offset losses after being determined by the method in which the committee had voted on to only qualify or only factor in unemployment insurance in excess of the $10,000 mark. So the first $10,000 was forgiven. And so with that in mind, any operator who should not receive anything should not be of the mindset that this is not fair, because this is not the intent of these funds. If anything, any operator who has been found to have received in excess of, whether it's $1,000 based off of the $10,000 allowance, you've actually received well over your average amount of annual profitability. So, you know, in my thought, just in my world, if I was on this list, I wouldn't personally mind being on the non-receiving end, because the operators that are receiving something aren't shored up 100% to where they left off. So even at this 58%, again, that's 58%, it still runs them short. So, you know, this the purpose of these funds, I think, you know, certainly our benefit. I know, I think we did a great job in getting this calculated. I'm just happy that we were able to come to this day to be able to present this and announce that we are finally here to make these payments. So I just want to let you all know, in the next coming days, you should be hearing from your field rep or receiving something in the mail to sign. And as we receive these, we will start to release payments individually. I am extremely confident in the numbers, because I've looked at every single number on every operator's business report. So I am with certain that the numbers are accurate.
Tyrell, sorry, Shelley. So for clarity, everybody will be getting these attestments by our U.S. Postal Services, or will it be via email so we could DocuSign? It will all be on paper?
I think the best way to do it is probably, you know, everybody doesn't have a printer or doesn't have the means of electronics, so it's going to be by the operator's choice of receipt. I'll have field reps reach out to each one of you to find out how you would prefer to receive this, and then we'll submit it, we'll forward it over in the manner in which you're requesting it in.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense. Anybody else on the committee have any questions in regards? Okay. Agency matters, transfers and trainings. At this time, we have no transfers. We are just hopeful to keep resuming operators in their businesses. As far as trainings, again, the Mini Glass virtual conference is available for free. I believe I sent an email out September 2nd in regards, so I ask operators, should you have the ability to join this virtual conference, to do so. I think collectively all ears should be on deck to ensure we maximize any gems of business moving forward, because we certainly need to hear all